In 2003, writer John DeGatta wrote a powerful essay about a young man who committed suicide in Las Vegas. John ultimately submitted that essay to the San Francisco magazine The Believer, and thus was launched a seven-year holy war over facts. DeGatta, an essayist, said facts could be fluid. It was the impact of the story that mattered. His fact-checker, Jim Fingal, took a binary approach. Something was a fact or it wasn't, and facts were sacred. Soon, Fingal produced 90 pages of inaccuracies, which the two turned into a book with email exchanges like the following one read by our colleagues. Fingal questions John on the time John said it took for the poor young jumper to hit the ground. John DeGatta said it was 9 seconds, but the coroner said it was 8.
Yeah, I fudged that. It doesn't seem like it should be a big deal, though. It's only a second, and I needed him to fall for 9 seconds rather than 8 in order to help make some of the later themes in the essay work.
John, changing details about stuff like Tabasco sauce bottles and thermometers is one thing, but it seems a tad unethical to fiddle with details that relate directly to the kid's death.
I don't think it's unethical, particularly because I wasn't alone in assuming his fall took 9 seconds. For a while, his parents also assumed that he had fallen for 9 seconds.
But now you do know better, so shouldn't it change?
9 is too integral a part of the essay at this point, and I admit that I'm wrong about 9 later on anyway. So the essay's not changing. It would ruin the essay.
It would ruin it to make it more accurate?
Yep.
Well, now those emails have been turned into the Broadway play Lifespan of a Fact, with powerhouse actors Bobby Cannavale as writer John DeGatta, Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, as fact-checker Jim Fingal, and Cherry Jones as an editor refereeing the two. The 7 years of fact-finding has been condensed into 24 hours in which the three are trapped in an apartment like caged cougars, battling, sometimes physically, over the meaning of facts as a deadline looms. Which side will win? Will editor Cherry Jones publish it? We never find out. We met up backstage with all three before a recent matinee. As veterans of the stage, can you feel what we felt in the audience last night? People on the edge of their seat. It's like, I don't want to try to outdo the critics here with describing this, but I came up with epistolary pugilism.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It feels like we're at almost a fight or a debate.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just have to take a moment and just really acknowledge that I just was referred to as a veteran actor in the company of these two for the first time. Thank you. That's awesome. And yeah, I mean, I've never done a play before that has an argument at the center of it. To feel that going backwards and forwards every night is really special, and like some nights I'll feel the audience finding me particularly irritating at a certain moment. Some of Jim's quibbles like make the audience go, oh, this guy's being ridiculous, but actually like they're not in my head, they are not ridiculous at all. I find like it fires you up to go, okay, I have to try and win this even more.
Bobby, do you feel that? Because there was a guy behind me last night, I don't know if you guys could hear this, he kept going, yeah, when you would make a point. Did you feel that?
Sometimes we do, like any good play, you know, the events of the play have to be the biggest events of the characters on stage's lives, in a sense. And I think it works best when the three of us are fighting for it with all our lives.
But Cherry, explain your character, because the character isn't in the book, but there is an editor.
Well, it's funny because Jim Fingal and John DeGatta, who we've been seeing a lot of, because they've come to the show many times. In fact, last night when I said the first line of the play is, okay, Jim Fingal, I heard people actually laughed. And it was when I left the theater last night, Jim Fingal was standing there with 30, literally 30 of his relatives who'd flown in from all over the country. When I opened the book, which they kindly gave us for opening night, Jim's comment was, man, we could have used you.
your character as this sort of, what, the soul of the argument?
I don't know if she's the soul of the argument, but she's the one who has to make the decision. And she so desperately wants to publish it because she really thinks it will help at this moment in time. But at the same time, she is a journalist. And
Damn it.
Every night as I come down to the moment of the play where a decision has to be made.
You and your character have not made up their mind.
Until the moment I reach for the phone.
Wow.
It's who convinces me.
I'm going to start asking you if you publish it or not every night now. That's going to be part of our post-show debrief.
I'm going to start bringing money. You know what Fingal wrote in my book?
No.
Thanks for having John's back.
Let's talk about that.
When your character, John DeGatto, is saying things like, yeah, there are 31 strip clubs, but 34 is a better number, so I like that number. My head was exploding. You can't do that. It's bad for all journalism, whether it's an essay or news.
There's a difference between an essay and a piece of writing in a newspaper.
But there's no difference between a fact and a fact. Oh, my God, we're having the play.
Oh, yeah.
No, but there is a difference in an artistic piece being written in an essay. You know, what would you say about the Greek histories? What would you say about In Cold Blood?
I would say, Daniel, you're smiling. Daniel's character, Jim, would say, if it's 31 strip clubs, you can't make it 34 because you like the way that number sounds. You've obviously decided your character's not a bad guy, where in real life...
Well, let's not call him a bad guy anyway. He's a writer. He's right. An artist.
But in real life, he has said that. The real writer has said, oh my God, I'm like the devil's spawn to some people.
Yeah, people just destroyed him, and they continue to do so. I don't think it's fair. John doesn't work for the Washington Post. He's not writing articles for the New York Times. He's illuminating the lives of people who normally would never be written about. It follows in a long line of tradition. Why all of a sudden, because we're in such a controversial time, we're going to just say to all these artists, you can't do that anymore?
But that brings us to present day. And you're all aware that there's a moment in the play where Bobby, your character, John DeGatto, has a line, and most of the lines are straight out of the real-life interaction.
There's a whole world of facts to choose from. The wrong facts get in the way of the story.
Yeah. And your character
says the wrong facts. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. Well, you've got to be aware that we have a presidential spokesperson, Kellyanne Conway, who spoke of alternative facts. You're nodding, Cherry.
It's interesting because there's a beautiful speech about the importance of facts in democracy, and it frequently gets applause.
The argument is basically that if you are reading something or watching something and you find even one thing to be untrue in it, the whole thing can fall apart for you and your trust and your relationship with that thing. You know, there's one point in the play where we're debating about the length of time this person fell for, and that's one of those moments that the audience is kind of going like, oh, come on, clearly you are going too far. This is not a difference that matters. You know, Jim wants to publish this essay. He is convinced that by making it truer, you will also make it more beautiful inherently.
Yeah, but it is irritating at a certain point. Jim Fingal does start to feel, like one headline said, a little bit crazy.
I think Jim's failing in the play is that he can't differentiate between the things that are really, like, you know, there's a case of like picking your battles. He becomes more and more entrenched as the argument between him and John gets more intense.
You do both become the divided United States in a way, you know, over this issue of facts. And Cherry, again, there you are in the middle. Talk about the physicality on the stage. I mean, there's heat up there.
There is. And in fact, I left a little more heat happening last night. I was slow on an entrance last night.
When they were strangling each other?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm really not winning that fight.
Okay, Bobby, you are strangling Daniel. Okay.
Yeah. It does go to those extremes because these two men care so much. And it is, in that sense, where we are as a nation right now of what facts mean to, I hate to say, the either side. And I just can't believe we're talking about our country that way.
But Daniel, you actually got a taste of this. You went to The New Yorker and you were fact checker for a day.
Yeah.
Apparently, handshaking on your red pen when you made a call. You had to call a restaurateur after someone wrote a review.
Yes.
So you had to check the description of the food in it.
As I was doing it, I was like, well, I guess every ingredient mentioned is a fact. So I'm just going to have to ask him about every single ingredient that is mentioned here.
And he only missed one. They were ready to hire him on the spot.
Yeah, well, that's very kind. Yeah.
Which is the fact you missed?
I can't remember now.
It was the S on restaurant.
Oh, yes. I didn't underline restaurants, which I should have, because I should have checked if it was in fact plural, and he had two previous restaurants or one previous restaurant.
I have to ask, you all are actors. You've all been written about. Do you come away from this play feeling better about the press, more frightened about the press? Oh, my God, if there are only 31 strip clubs and we're writing 34...
You've got to read, listen, see with your eyes as much as you possibly can in these days.
And fact check.
And fact check.
I mean, to be honest, there's such a huge gulf in my head between, like, the people that write silly stories about me in England and, like, the people whose journalism is stopping the world from falling apart that I don't even think of them as being the same job.
Good.
So, like, I know we've been talking about this play as an argument play, ultimately, the truth is we need both. Not one of us is right. Well, like, the failure in both of our characters is that there's no sense of, like, compromise or working with the other or recognition that the other could have a point. Both are what we need going forward in the actual real world.
And by both, you mean the sweeping, beautiful, the story, I think your character says, Bobby, that can change the world.
Yeah. I just want to say that just because you have a website and you hire a bunch of people to write stories doesn't make you a journalist. And I think we're just so accustomed now to be able to having all these options, but all the options aren't good. And a lot of them are erroneous. They're motivated by other interests. And I think we just have to have more common sense. And people like John DeGatta, he's an artist, and he's always had a place historically in the culture. And to blame John DeGatta for doing what has been done for thousands of years because of the stupidity going on in the country and in the world, I think is a disservice to art.
Actors Bobby Cannavale, Cherry Jones, and Daniel Radcliffe battle over facts in the terrific new Broadway play, Lifespan of a Fact. Weigh in, hearnow.org.